Welcome to Interviews for Resistance. We are now several months into the Trump administration, and activists have scored some important victories in those months. Yet there's always more to be done, and for many people, the question of where to focus and how to help remains. In this series, we talk with organizers, agitators, and educators, not only about how to resist, but how to build a better world. I am Sarah Jaffe, your host.
I'm Libby Devlin. I'm the Southern Region Director for National Nurses Organizing Committee, National Nurses United. I'm on the Governing Council of the Southern Movement Assembly, and that I'm on the Coordinating Committee for the Southern Workers Assembly, which is what runs the Southern Workers School.
Saladin Muhammad, retired National Rep of the United Electrical Workers Union, founding member of the Black Workers for Justice, and co-coordinator of the Southern Movement Assembly.
Great. I'm Rita Valenti. I'm a registered nurse. I work with National Nurses Organizing Committee. I'm a Project South founder, and happy to be on the call.
Wonderful. So we're talking after a little while after the Southern Movement Assembly happened. So I want to start off with telling our readers, listeners who don't know about it, what that was.
It's a convergence of organizations, grassroots organization, largely anchored in the African American grassroots struggles in all of the states in the South, creating a movement framework to tie what essentially have been local organizations and local struggles, so that there's some sense of strategy and program right. And people's understanding of a Southern freedom movement.
Wonderful. And tell us a little bit, if somebody wants to jump in here, on about the history of the movement assembly, how long this has been going on, and the background towards to this coming together.
Okay, well, it might make sense for me to say a little bit about that. This is the Southern Movement Assembly 7. Our first one was in 2012 in Lowndes County, Alabama. And each movement assembly has built on the one before it and utilizes, has developed a set of principles with which people can work together and a practice of consciousness, vision, and strategy in terms of coordinating our activity and ultimately trying to build power from the bottom up to end oppression and exploitation of our people in the South.
Yeah.
And I would add to that we have all agreed, all the organizations, I think there's 20 organizations that participate in the Southern Movement Assembly, and we've all agreed to a blueprint, which is a Southern People's Initiative, which includes, working to build a new economy, also to establish more of a people's democracy, and to protect and defend each other within that democracy. And so those are the overriding principles that we're working toward in the context of the principles of unity that we've also all agreed to in terms of the process by which we work toward those goals.
Excellent.
Right.
Let's talk a little bit about how this past assembly went. I guess, was it at all different what you were thinking about with Trump as president, or, are you still pretty focused on the same things that were happening before?
We have a long-term perspective, and that was regardless of who was president. And obviously, the Trump presidency had some influence on how we think about a long-term perspective, because this certainly is a part of the long-term perspective of the elite class and the direction of the system. We felt that it's important that people have a perspective so that we don't just panic
right.
because of this direction,
right.
And this open facilitation of white supremacy and white nationalism. So, as Rita pointed out, building on the past assembly informed us, on the road ahead. So, I would say that, yes, it's had some influence, but it didn't disrupt the perspective.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, some of the Southern organizers I've talked to recently have all kind of said, you know, America woke up in the South after Trump was elected, that we've already been struggling with people who are a lot like Trump, that he was not actually that surprising to people who'd been organizing in places like North Carolina or Alabama. So tell us a little bit about what happened at this assembly. What were some of the sessions like? Who was there? What were some of the conversations that people were having?
Well, I could get started. I mean, I think there were about 300 people there, and that showed to me just more and more of a deep commitment, but because to get to Whittaker, North Carolina is not just landing in an airport someplace.
Right.
You actually have to be engaged, right, and really committed to building this work. It was a series of frontline assemblies that engaged National Student Bill of Rights. Another assembly dealt with mass incarceration and de-incarcerating the assemblies, one on climate change, People's Democracy Assembly, and then, of course, the assembly that Libby and Saladin and I and a lot of other folks put together for Workers' Justice Assembly, assembly on migration, and one on Economies for Survival Assembly, plus a number of skill building assemblies that dealt, you know, with strategy and tactics, as well as vision. So it was a beautiful space, and in a lot of ways it created a sort of a harm-free liberation zone where people felt very comfortable to share their views and really try to come together to develop political strategy, recognizing and honoring the space that we were in from Native peoples who had once been in the Franklinton Center space to the plantation system of slavery that had also been a space at the Franklinton Center, and now to a liberating space where we're looking to build, again, you know, powers to come together and free our people.
I know Black Workers for Justice has been involved in the past, and, you know, I think this is the third assembly that the NNU has participated in, but this particular assembly had, I think, more focus on the idea of workplace democracy and building worker organizations in their workplaces as a way to expand democracy and as a way to protect and defend each other. And I mean, it's just, there was a little bit, I thought, more attention to the idea that we need to have a worker-based movement if we intend to really do anything about the sort of, you know, the income inequality, the wealth inequality, the lack of democracy really in our, basically in our country at this point.
Absolutely.
So that was an interesting and good development.
And on that note, why don't we talk a little bit about the Workers' Justice Assembly in particular, and the sort of things that were discussed and the people who took part, and what the, I guess, the next steps are after that.
The Worker Justice Assembly represented, I would say, a new entity, or as described in the Southern Movement Assembly, a new front line, that is, a new a new battlefront, a new issue, struggle. And the question of organization in the Southern Movement Assembly, which has become a kind of common notion, has been a community organization, community-based organization. The question of building organization at the workplace, an organization that directly impacts the economy from the standpoint of what the how the system produces commodities and creates the basis for wealth. This is a new front line. So the Workers' Assembly provided an experience that has been a little different from other frontline assemblies. We involved participants in a practice that maybe trade union organizing does, meeting other people or asking them where they work at, asking them about what issues they face, where they work, et cetera. And then going out to some real workplaces to leaflet and to talk to workers and to be able to report back that experience to have a sense of what workplace organizing, some of the things that workplace organizing entails. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, that was a new experience and a new practice, and hopefully, will be appreciated in the whole ongoing motion of the Southern Movement Assembly.
Right.
I would add in also, you know, obviously the unions have a real vested interest in having strong alliances with community organizations. And, you know, particularly the nurses, our natural allies are patients and community. And so it's important, I think, for the unions to be involved in the Southern Movement Assembly because it engages unions and community organizations together. Mm-hmm. But I do think that the unions bring, something important to this relationship in that we as unions are the ones who sort of directly confront capital every day at work, right? Mm-hmm. And many of the community organizations, they engage in really important organizing, but they don't necessarily have an automatic relationship via their union, right, to directly confront some of the economic systems that are particularly exploitive and unfair to people. And so to bring that alliance together and to figure out where do these community organizers themselves work, right, and are they interested in participating in a broader economic struggle for economic justice, and also to sort of just bring that consciousness to people. I thought it was a very interesting and informative for me, mm-hmm. educational experience to go through that with people and discuss what people's perspective is on that, and to build a broader relationship with people who are, we're all on the same team, right? We might approach it from different methods, but we are all on the same team, and how do we become larger than the sum of our parts?
Right. I wanted to add just a little bit to that too, because I was very, very excited about, the presence of some of the key unions that really do have an understanding of sort of a social unionism, which brings together the workplace and the community issues and sees those things, as Libby was saying, and Salome, interconnected, as opposed to a more elitist business unionism model that tends to, collaborate with the boss. The other thing that I think also came out of this is this whole notion as well of a gig economy and what mm-hmm. a lot of young workers are facing in terms of, just this, internships and contracting and some of the real problems that young workers face in an economy that's constantly changing, and has been developing in a way that unpaid labor and lack of benefits are the the norm for so many of the young workers. And how does this collaboration between unionism and grassroots organizing actually begin to challenge power and transform our society in ways that address the current situation? I know that in our assembly we had nurses, we had retired workers, we had representatives from UE and of course from NNU, as well as a lot of workers who were working in 501c3s mm-hmm. And struggling to bring together their work experience with their desire to transform this country. So it was new and exciting in a lot of ways. And the next step in terms of building power, because the South goes, so goes the nation.
We also had some online journalists as part of the Worker Justice Assembly. And this was before Ricketts closed down his business rather than deal with the union. So I do think that that is an episode, really. Like, this, what he did, I think we need to learn from that and think about how do we approach some of the, I don't know if I would call the online journalism as part of the gig economy, but it certainly is a precarious type of work. And how are we going to approach the precarious work, to be able to have people take power in a way that they don't have to? And that was such an outrageous reaction on his part that you wonder, like, what do we learn from that, and how do we build on that and figure out what the next and proper steps are?
I think that an important lesson when there are so many different front lines and dealing with the experience of the role of the state locally and the role of the state nationally and its international role, that recognizing that this also develops contradictions, that is, that contradictions in people's language, in terms of how they frame things, contradictions in people's sense of the importance of their various areas of work. So for me, the Southern Movement Assembly raises the issue of how a movement has to deal with contradictions that emerge out of organizing in a changing economy and also in a changing political reality. And whether or not the differences that exist should be viewed as antagonistic within the movement, or a learning curve, that the movement has to understand in order to be able to move forward collectively. So there was challenges, even as we talk about a liberated space to be able to deal with questions and issues. I think we've learned that even in liberated spaces, sometimes, there will be differences that a movement has to try, to navigate and work out. There was challenges, and understanding challenges, in the course of carrying out a strategy and a program is something that I think the assembly helped us to learn.
I wanted to ask something you said there when you were talking about the different communities. One of the things that different parts of the South have been facing this year, and I know you had people from Puerto Rico join this assembly too, right?
Yeah.
So one of the challenges that several places have faced this year has been the several hurricanes, and looking forward into a world of climate change. I wonder how much you guys talked about these storms and what being ready for the next ones would look like.
Wow, that's very profound, because I think one of the leaps that has occurred in the Southern Movement Assembly process was Southern Movement Assembly, I think it was 5, Go South Rising, where that sort of marked the 10th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina and the aftermath of Katrina with the huge amount of privatization.
Right.
That went along in New Orleans, and a real wake up call that, as Saladin was mentioning, the state is not organized to support our people. So what is it that we have to do in terms of building leverage and power? And one of the reasons that I love, this movement assembly process is because it's beginning to address that, and also love, NNU, because it It started, the RN, and Libby can speak to this more, she likes the RN to RN program with Katrina that brought nurses into the Gulf after Katrina, and has also, you know, sent nurses into Puerto Rico, not from the perspective of colonizers, but from the perspective of what's on the ground and how do we assist with that. So part of this, I think, in the bringing in of unions, progressive unions into the movement assembly, is the building of capacity and organization, which is the other question that comes out of this Southern Movement Assembly process, which is, what is the nature of organization we have to build to win?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
So we also, as NNU and National Nurses Organizing Committee, we have a very strong position opposed to the things that create climate change. And so we have an environmental and climate justice working group in our union. We just passed a very strong resolution at our convention last month to oppose the things that cause climate change. We have a very active anti-fracking group that we work with. We are allied with Food and Water Watch on the anti-pipeline work, the anti-fracking work. We are, and you know, and then so we are looking to participate in helping to solve some of the root causes of these climate disasters.
Right.
And then we also have this, it's called the Registered Nurse Relief Network, which we send folks out to, you know, where there are major disasters. And you may even know about it. We send people all over the world at different times. We have, in our union, we have hundreds of nurses in Houston and Corpus Christi who are members of the union. We have you know, hundreds and thousands that were impacted by the Irma hurricane. We don't actually have any active membership in Puerto Rico, but we did send our largest delegation of disaster relief nurses to go work there, because that was, you know, obviously by far the biggest in terms of the governmental response, got the least and had the most need. And so, but, you know, we would, in our view, better to not need RNRN.
Right.
We would be able to resolve the climate change.
Right.
Yeah, the Hurricane Katrina and Gulf Rising. Katrina, for many of us, brought forward the beginning understanding of disaster capitalism. And that was, that's an important aspect of our understanding, even about the question of climate change and the role of the state, you know, the failures of the state. And so it is bringing to what has essentially been a network, concepts and understandings to be able to be a movement. And that's very important. There's so many conferences that take on similar, not identical, characters maybe as the Southern Movement Assembly, but the difference between the Southern Movement Assembly and a conference and, you know, workshops, et cetera, is that, you know, it's a part of an ongoing process of forging and building a movement with a consciousness that's both that's local, national, and international, global, you know, to really see how those features are forged, you know, is a way to look at the experience of Southern Movement Assembly and its annual convergence.
One of you said that, you know, as goes the South, so goes the country. And I think that's particularly true in the age of Trump. So what are a couple of the lessons from this past assembly and from the work of doing these assemblies more broadly that people from outside the South should take?
Well, a lot of us, I'll just get started. I really just want to kind of underscore what Saladin just said, because, you know, this notion of not just mobilizing, not going backwards in history to a time that is past, but and not just a series of worships, but actually deep political organizing that produces a change of consciousness and begins to actually discuss the vision of the world that we want to build in this hugely transitional and chaotic period, and then development of strategies. And I think that the South has had much more of a handle on that because we've had a lot less since our inception, resources that we've had to rely on each other and respect each other and understand, the centrality of our history based in genocide and slavery. Wall Street has controlled the South, and through that control has really controlled the nation. And we see that in not just this Trump era, but more so, the history of right to work, in terms of labor, the history of states' rights, particularly in terms of health care and failures to expand Medicaid and move forward. So there's just what we bring, I think, to this table is that we try to listen to each other and not just tell each other.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to add to that. When you look at, I always kind of hoped that the standards in the northern states would move south, not vice versa. And so when you look at income inequality is worse in the South, health outcomes are worse in the South, education quality is worse in the South, and so mortality rates are worse in the South. It's really you could say that's rooted in, the percent of unionization rates is directly linked to all of that as well. And so, particularly income inequality and wealth inequality, there's a real correlation between union strength and income inequality. I mean, reverse, right? The stronger the union is, the less income inequality is. What we bring from the South is that we've been living under these same conditions that the existing government and their funders would like to see brought throughout the country. And so we've existed, we've thrived really, and so we've survived. Right. And we can teach people how we have done that, right? Because I think a lot of people in places like, Michigan, Wisconsin, Illinois, Indiana, who are now going to be faced, Missouri, right? They're all going to be faced with the same conditions that we have now. And I know that they're working to try to figure out how do you fight back in that environment, because the political climate has been different there and not the way it has been here. And so one thing that people can learn from us is how to be maybe scrappier, right? How do you fight in that context,
So that's
And I know that that's been going on. There's been a lot of cross-state discussion that's been going on, and I think that that's helpful and useful.
I would just add one brief point. I mean, historically, the labor movement in particular has not recognized the strategic role of the South in a national strategy. The South is a zone of global capital, very much like and properly that pre-existed NAFTA, the maquiladoras, et cetera. But the South hasn't been looked at almost as if it had maquiladoras, where international capital has now seen it as a region of concentration that's protected by a state that's dominant internationally. Mm-hmm. And so, not recognizing it, economists have said that the regional economy of the South would be considered as the fourth world's largest economy, following Japan. And so if we're not recognizing, you know, this concentration of global capital in the South and understanding how, you know, to challenge, you know, just the outrageous actions mm-hmm. of U.S. and global capital, then I don't think, you know, we're looking at a strategy correctly. When Wisconsin happened mm-hmm. And the issue of the right to work was raised, it appeared as if the sky had fallen. We've been living under the right to work.
Right.
And it never sounds like the sky is falling for the South.
Right. Right.
You know, almost as if, you know, that's normal for us. Let's worry about something that's not normal for every place else.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, in terms of how capital, in terms of so-called deindustrialization and the Rust Belt and all that stuff, utilized the South, I don't think, you know, that we had a good handle outside of the South
mm-hmm.
on understanding what that's going to mean for the labor movement
yeah.
In terms of its shrinkage and the like. So, again, I think, you know, looking at the South almost as a kind of internal colony, if you will,
mm-hmm.
in terms of how capital, you know, views it and reorganizing itself. I think that's something that we have to get a better, that the northern forces have to get a better handle on.
Excellent. So I know your work is going to go on in various places after this assembly. How can people keep up with the work each of you are doing and the organizations you're part of?
Well, we have a Southern Workers School. I'll let somebody else deal with that. That, you know, we think is a part of supporting the school and is a part of how to be able to relate to the work of our various organizations.
Right, and let's see, there's so much going on. I know that the next piece that's sort of following right on the heels of this is the United States Human Rights Network is also meeting here. Everybody's meeting in Atlanta this year, though. It's very, very interesting. But U.S. Human Rights Network is meeting here in early December. We're going to be building out a Metro Nurses Council here in Atlanta that will, you know, also, I think, you know, incorporate some of our understandings in the Southern Movement Assembly. There are monthly Southern Movement Assembly membership calls. It really provides a space for people to engage politically. So there's just a tremendous amount. There's so much going on. To actually build more deeply into this work that I think it offers a real opportunity.
And so I would just to add to the Southern Workers School issue. There's it's not a location, right? We can run these schools really
right.
anywhere that people have an interest in doing it. And the idea being that, you know, you would have a cadre of people in various workplaces and all across the South who have a way of communicating with each other about different strategies that they've worked, that they've used at work, into what worked, what didn't work, you know, what they could have done better, how they can confront issues in the workplace like job discrimination or underpay or short staffing or, you know, any number of issues that people have every day, right? And what are the methods that they're using that's been effective? And we can set one up really anywhere. Like we've done one, we did one in Raleigh, we've done one in Atlanta, we've got one, we're thinking about doing one in Tampa. We can set it up where there's any gathering of people that want to talk about it. And I think it's an important, that I think is a very important development that's happened in the past that school exists.
Interviews for Resistance is a project of Sarah Jaffe with assistance from Laura Fayebois and support from the Nation Institute. You can find more information at necessarytrouble.org. Thanks for listening.